Good day, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today, as we typically do on a Friday morning, we are going to recap the week that was, including the factors behind recent selling pressure and risk assets, global developments with respect to the COVID-19 pandemic, and more. Plus, as always, we will, of course, preview for you what you can expect in the week ahead. So joining me here on the line this morning for the conversation, glad to welcome back Mike Gord. Mike, as you know, is an investment associate for the Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, Mike, welcome back. Happy Friday, and looking forward to catching up on the Top of the Morning podcast.
Hi, Dan. Absolutely. Looking forward to it. And thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. So, Mike, maybe we can begin with risk assets. I know they came under pressure a bit this week. We had a tough day on Monday, Wednesday. I know we're feeling some selling pressure in the futures this morning ahead of the open in just a few moments. So can you begin by walking us through the factors at play behind these market moves?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a few factors here that are in play. We did highlight them. We published an alert out Wednesday evening. So some of the factors here are, you know, policy uncertainty is still exceptionally high. That includes uncertainty around the future of fiscal stimulus here in the U.S. Additionally, on Wednesday, the Business Roundtable Association of Major CEOs joined the Fed in calling for further stimulus measures. But, you know, with the Supreme Court justice seat now open and what's going to likely be an acrimonious battle for the nomination ahead, it's unlikely that we're going to get this fiscal stimulus before the election. So that was leading to a lot of the policy uncertainty. A good piece of news, though, on that front is that the Congress did reach a deal on a continuing resolution for the budget, so we will not get a government shutdown next week at the end of the month. Another factor at play was, you know, just the development of the virus, you know, around the world. New cases are rising in different regions. We're seeing some hot spots in Europe, across parts of the U.S. still. And the U.S. did hit that grim milestone of 200,000 fatalities last week. In the U.K., the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, he canceled his planned fall budget and is preparing another round of job support measures to help deal with the economic fallout. So what we're really seeing is policymakers are beginning to see that this is going to be lingering and that they're going to have to take appropriate actions in response. Further, economic data has come in, you know, still mixed. The New York Fed's weekly economic index, which had been, you know, on a rapid improvement since May, it's been sideways since September now, so no major improvements there. And then we saw the Eurozone composite PMI. It fell almost 2 points in September as they've had to implement new social distancing measures in a number of jurisdictions. And then lastly, you know, probably one of the bigger drivers is just that the tech sector remains under intense pressure. The NASDAQ has underperformed the broader market over this week and did enter officially correction territory, down 10% from its peak in early September. In terms of newer developments, the U.S. Department of Justice, they unveiled a proposal to limit legal protections that internet companies enjoy around liability over content that their users post. So, you know, those are kind of the four things. Economic data mix, policy uncertainty is high, the pandemic's still not under enough control, and really tech was leading this sell-off.
So clearly a lot of factors at play, Mike, and thank you for recapping those for us. I wish we had time to dive deep into all of them, but where to begin, right? Maybe we can start with the COVID-19 pandemic. And to your point, we did receive some disappointing news out of the United Kingdom this week. We did hear from Prime Minister Boris Johnson, and it seems like the developments out of the UK did cause some weakness in domestic markets, as you pointed out, as well as markets over in Europe. But can you speak a bit to what's the latest over in the UK and Europe with respect to the uptick in cases?
Yeah, so I think the news out of the UK that you're referring to was the increased restrictions that they've put on indoor dining and especially on pubs. That definitely hurt sentiment and definitely, you know, exhibited some selling pressure on local markets there. But beyond that, I think it's worth giving a quick update on virus developments overall. Also on social activity and the race for a vaccine. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to start with the virus developments. Overall hospitalization rates and fatalities are still well below the spring levels in the U.S. and Europe. The U.S. outbreak has stabilized somewhat, and hotspots have shifted from, the Sun Belt, some of those southern states, to the Midwest. We're seeing first signs of the outbreak slowing in Spain, while France and the UK, they're lagging by a few weeks, so they're still increasing. But news flow could concentrate on the rising hospitalizations and death. That's just part of the time lag. And so that'll probably be the focus in Europe for a number of weeks going forward. On the macro social activity side, we are seeing like those UK restrictions. We're also seeing some restrictions in France, mainly targeting the hospitality industry and indoor type venues. But nationwide lockdowns remain very unlikely. That's just going to be majorly based on the huge negative perception of fully locking down again. So social activity, mixed. And then on the drug treatment vaccine development side, we still expect to see some phase three data in late October, maybe early November. There were some hiccups due to slower recruitment for participants in the trials and higher FDA requirements that were unveiled. That being said, late 2020 emergency use approval is still possible. And we still expect, much wider vaccine availability in the second quarter of next year. A positive news point on the vaccine front this week was that Johnson & Johnson has announced that they are beginning, or they have begun, phase three clinical trials for their vaccine candidates. So we have another possible, fix here in the pipeline. So that's kind of the latest on the virus front.
Okay, Mike, very comprehensive. Appreciate the update there. And it does sound like there are some encouraging developments on the vaccine front, as you outlined for us. So something that we'll continue to track very closely. Maybe on the topic of notable macro data points, can you spend a few moments, Mike, recapping what we received this past week?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was actually a fairly quiet week, at least, compared to what next week's going to be on the economic data front. We got a bit of housing market data, which came in about as expected and shows the market is, still recovering. But there are pockets of strength. For example, existing home sales for August were above the levels from, pre-pandemic. So big boost there. We also got the market's preliminary flash PMI readings for September. So these initial readings, they showed very little change from the last month. So suggesting that things have cooled down a little bit in September. And yesterday we got some disappointing labor market data. The weekly initial jobless claims numbers actually increased from the prior week. So still very high and still at about four times pre-pandemic levels. So we'd love to see those come down a bit more meaningfully. And then on the continuing claims side, they had a small dip. But again, still double the peak from the global financial crisis. So those are the major economic data points from this week.
Thank you, Mike. And as you pointed out, it sounds like next week we have a lot to expect in terms of data. So that and anything else, what's happening next week, Mike, that investors should pay close attention to?
Yeah. So very busy week in the week ahead. We'll be watching a number of things on the political front as well as the economic data front. As our listeners are probably aware of, President Trump intends to nominate a candidate to fill late Justice Ginsburg's Supreme Court seat. So that's expected to come tomorrow. Beyond that, we'll be looking at what the professional court watchers and pollsters have to say about the candidate and how that might affect the race as we head into November 3rd. Then on Tuesday evening, we have the first presidential debate between President Trump and former Vice President Biden. So we'll be watching that closely. And then we'll also be hoping, fingers crossed, that we'll have some developments on another fiscal package coming out of Congress. There's been a lot of chatter about this week on the Hill. Democrats are looking to possibly, you know, make a further proposal. So we'll see. There have been positive comments from House Speaker Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin in that vein. So hopefully they can come to some type of agreement. So on the economic data front, still a number of points we'll be looking for next week. We get a number of consumer confidence and sentiment gauges. So we'll be watching, you know, sentiment is everything here. We also get the third revision for second quarter GDP. So we'll be looking into the details there to see if there's any, you know, weakness or standout segments in the revision. You know, next week we'll get another initial and continuing jobless claims data, hoping to see a reversal of this week's trends, which were fairly disappointing there. We also get personal income and personal spending for August, you know, with enhanced unemployment benefits having expired. We're expecting a decent drop in income figures, and, you know, naturally this would lead to a lower spending figure. So looking for lower numbers there from last month as well. And then we get the ISM readings. So on the industrial side of the economy, we're looking for things to hopefully continue showing signs that they're picking up steam. And then lastly, on Friday, we get September labor market data. So hoping to continue to see strong numbers of workers returning to the workforce and those non-farm payroll numbers. So, like I said, very busy week next week.
Absolutely, spanning political developments to macro data. So, Mike, in that case, I hope you have a restful weekend, but do appreciate you, Mike, as always, joining us on the Top of the Morning Weekend Review Preview. Terrific recap. I know we covered a lot of ground, so it was great catching up with you this morning, Mike, and we'll look forward to doing it again soon.
Thanks, Ben. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Mike. You as well. And again, today we have been joined by Mike Gord. Mike is investment associate for the Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. And there are many publications and blogs I want to highlight available now for you up on UBS Online Services for UBS clients. As always, please reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of any of the blogs or publications directly, though all of these resources can now be located for you up on UBS Online Services. Top of the Morning. We'll be back again for you on Monday morning. Have a great weekend, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.